Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, we'd like to welcome everyone to Africa on the Move. As your host, Brother Africa, we're going to be talking about a subject matter that is currently going on and is having a great impact on our various communities. And that subject that we are talking about is this whole question of what's going on in the world of sports, particularly the National Football League. And it seems that we are playing a musical chair game this off season. We were often taught and led to believe that for those who want to become athletes, the greater you are, the more potential you can make. The more you produce, the more money you'll get, and it's totally tied into production. But there seems to be a trend that's been going on over the last year and a half, where great athletes, instead of being rewarded more money, they are being forced to take less money. Instead of great athletes being seen to be having a longevity with one team, they seem to be being shipping around to different teams, irregardless of their production. And we'd like to have an honest discussion as we look at what's going on today in the world of sports inside the U.S., particularly with the NFL Football League, as it relates to sports, the issue of race and money, because I think they all intertwine. And to have this discussion this evening, we have three or four analysts with us. We have Brother Hakeem out of the state of Virginia. We have Brother Anthony out of the state of New Jersey. We also have with us Brother Jabari out of the state of Virginia, and out of the state of D.C., or the district of D.C., we have with us Brother Robert Moses. We would like to welcome all y'all to Africa on the Move, and our theme tonight is sports, race, and money. And we want to talk about what's going on and get y'all take what's going on in the world of sports today, particularly as it relates to professional sports. And for right now, I'd like to raise this question with Brother Hakeem. When we look at the recent behavior of one of the football teams out of the NFL, particularly we are talking about the Philadelphia Eagles, Hakeem, there has been a large discussion in the sports world about a recent decision where the coach and owner made to replace or to trade or to just outright cut one of the best wide receiver, or one of the best wide receiver, maybe some would say, in the National Football League, DeSean Jackson. And part of their rationale was that they believed that he was associated with or have a relationship with a gang. Well, many people don't believe that hype. They believe there's more to that. And they believe that one of the major reasons why they traded him is because of the fact that they just don't want to pay him the money that he deserved. At the process of trading or cutting DeSean Jackson, they also traded their first-grade quarterback, Michael Vick. They traded him to New York, and they exchanged him for a quarterback who was bench and no longer started, Sanchez. But at the same time, Michael Vick was also scheduled to receive around $10 million. And he ended up being traded to New York, and he had to end up taking a less contract. But at the same time, Sanchez came down to Philadelphia and received more money. So, Brother Hakeem, in terms of this, in reality, we've been taught that the better we are as athletes, the more we'll get, the more productive we are, the longevity we have with a particular team or probably with a league. For the last year, particularly the last 6 months, there seems to be something going on where the best athletes are getting cut or being forced to take less pay. As we talk about this question of race, sports, and money, give me your take on that, Brother Hakeem. What is going on?
Well, I think one of the things you alluded to is the ambiguous nature of markets. Often we talk about markets as being somehow a definitive understanding in terms of the way the economic system works. But in fact, when we talk about markets, what we're talking about speculation. And when you look at a case like DeSean Jackson, now one of the things that's very, very interesting, they didn't shop DeSean Jackson around. They cut him. So it seems to suggest there was some ulterior motive in terms of their real motivation in terms of getting rid of him. There is no question that money probably played a part in terms of, you know, not wanting to pay the man the kind of money that he's due. After all, he's one of the better receivers in NFL. But I think that beneath the surface is probably a situation which has historically been the case, where African athletes who stand up, those who take positions, you know, those who don't put in line, are often vilified by, you know, those in power, those who write the checks. So I think this notion that somehow the man coming from a city that he doesn't know people who are drug dealers, or he doesn't know people who are in the criminal underworld. I mean, socioeconomically speaking, I mean, that's just absurd. Of course, living in a big city, you're going to know people who engage in criminal activity. It doesn't mean that you're engaged in criminal activity or you support such activity, but it does speak to the fact that, you know, that you're cognizant of the fact that these individuals do exist. And so, therefore, this notion that somehow in order to protect the NFL brand, you know, that anything that potentially, you know, undermines, you know, the brand, we have to treat harshly. I think it opens the way for all kind of abuse in terms of, you know, particularly as it relates to stereotyping when it comes to African athletes, in terms of just given the socioeconomic realities that a lot of them come from. So I think it's a very, very dangerous precedent, and I think that it's been happening more and more and more, and I suspect that we're going to see more and more of that. So it's not a question in terms of one's ability, one's talent, or in terms of one's being compensated, and more in terms of, you know, protecting the NFL brand, and secondly, the owners maximizing their profits in terms of, you know, not paying attention to the market, but paying more attention in terms of, you know, just what they can get away in terms of the marketplace.
You know, I hear your analysis, and I concur with that, but I would also like to add to that analysis. I think also part of that analysis has the analysis of race, because if owners use a rationale of they're trying to maximize their profit, in some of the recent decisions that the owners have made, those decisions seem to be contrary. As you say, how do you cut one man and say you don't want to give him $10 million because he's not deserving, but at the same time you bring somebody in who never contributed anything to the team, or who is underperforming from another team, but you give him the same amount of money that you claim that you couldn't afford the man that you just cut? See, like, you know, you're swapping two different individuals, but one you have placed a greater value over another one. And I'm saying that because there seems to be a pattern in there. If you recently look at the decision that Julius Peppel, who played with Chicago Bears, they refused to give the money that he felt like he was worth, and they end up trading him to Green Bay Packers. Well, he went to the Packers, and he got more money, but the same amount of money when they claimed they couldn't give Julius Peppel for Chicago. Chicago brought in the defense end from Minnesota. What's the young man name? The European name?
Jared Allen.
The All Pro. Yeah, Greg.
Jared Allen.
Jared Allen. So, you know, I often wondering, you know, what is that all about? In terms of when you look at this question, if they see it financially, why are you trading ball players, but yet the same ball player that you're trading for, you are giving them the same amount of money when you claim you can give the first ball player that's playing with you? So race seems to be a factor to me. What do you think about that, Jabari?
Well, first and foremost, I want to let you know, Brother Africa, I agree with you and Brother Haki, and race plays a strong factor because if you look at the business landscape, as Brother Haki was alluding to, the majority of agents are not people that look like the athletes that we celebrate Sunday after Sunday. And because of that, with those agents, they won't want to get their cut. So in regards to some of these deals and situations dealing with, they're not doing anything to educate these brothers about financial literacy. So with these brothers, because they don't know their true bargaining power, you know, they're subject to being taken advantage of and find themselves in these situations where basically they're treated like, you know, indispensable parts. Because, you know, if you look at the trend of the New England Patriots, it's very rare they ever pay players what they do. You know, they always do that every year. They have players, and then they just cut them or trade them in, bring somebody else in and serve the same position. Every year it's just rotating pieces. And, you know, it really makes you wonder because You know, when they won their Super Bowls, they had this team. They were on a unified front. They had kept the core together for a good 3 or 4 years during the reign. But now they're an indispensable piece. It's almost like, long as they're making a profit, that is their Super Bowl. It's not about winning or what's best for the team, but it's what's going to make the owner the most money at the same time. Make him the most money, but at the same time undercutting the individuals that have to work the hardest.
Yeah, but New England also is interesting here, too, because we look at a lot of their behavior patterns. Even though they have a tendency to not to give in to ball players demand for salary, when they do give in for to demand salaries, you find a lot of times it seems like the ball players of European descent have a tendency to get better deals than those who are African descent and are better ball players. Would you not agree with that characteristic of the behavior of New England Patriots and some other teams in the last couple of years or so, Jabari?
Oh, absolutely. I've noticed that pattern because I also find it strange. You have black quarterbacks that set a precedent, and they perform and do well for so many years, but all of a sudden they may be one injury away from somebody replacing them, and we never hear from them. Because with Dante Culpepper, people still are wondering what happened in Minnesota. You know, he had several really good seasons there. You know, he made a couple Pro Bowls, things of that nature, but something happened where he got injured and he was replaced, and after that, you know, he struggled and may have had a couple backup jobs, but it was just like, you know, nobody really have any answers to what really happened.
Now, let me raise this question with Brother Anthony. And we're going to, let's look at sports within context as an institution within the capitalist system. We try to understand this question of racing and racing class and this question of race and capital. It's real ironic that when you look at football and basketball, those two particular institutions, they have a cap ceiling on how much money they can spend on a particular basketball team. For example, a football team, the owner is entitled to spend up to about $125 million per team. That means you have $125 million that you totally can invest in the whole team, and that's out of a total of 53 ball players. Basketball, they also have a cap. So what the cap does is it limits the potential of the ball players in terms of what they can get. But this is very strange because this particular cap is only unique to football and basketball. Why is it we don't have a cap in baseball? Baseball don't have a cap. You're looking at baseball now, these ball players are getting all kind of ridiculous salaries, up in the $100 million, you know, 4, 5, 6, 10 years. What is about baseball where the owners are not using the same rationale in terms of putting a cap versus football and basketball? And one of the things I see that they don't have in common is that in baseball, you have more white or European ball players than basketball and football. And I also wonder if we are talking about free market and everybody should be entitled to get as much as they can that the market dictates. Isn't that establishing a cap is a contradiction in the whole principle of a capitalist system? But, Anthony, can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. And to keep in mind, too, is that basketball, football, baseball, and hockey, they're also forms of entertainment. So in addition to making as much profits as possible, there's an effort to try to appeal to as many people that have disposable income as possible. And ironic, even though most of the people that do the work in football and basketball, for example, are African, most of the people that paid to watch the games are Europeans. And I think a piece of that is the fact that that there are more Europeans with, you know, disposable income that they can routinely splurge to pay to watch these games than there are Africans who can do the same thing. So there's a class dynamic connected with the two, and there's also a racial aspect in the fact that that Africans seem to be held to higher standards of conduct than their European counterparts. If you watch closely, how carefully scrutinized African athletes tend to be as opposed to European ones.
Okay, Brother Aki, when would the owners get a cap on how much money they can make since they're leveraging the ball players? What would it take for that to happen, Brother Aki?
For the owners to receive a cap?
Yes. They put a cap on how much the ball players they can spend on the ball players, what they can make. That seemed totally against the so-called free trade, free market concept. Why just add a cap on how much profit the owners can make?
Yeah. Well, the reality is that's simply not going to happen. Even though a lot of the owner's wealth doesn't necessarily come from, you know, the game per se, but in terms of, you know, city and state, entities, actually taking the wealth of the community and giving it to these owners in terms of making sure they have a professional, team in place. So therefore, their wealth is accumulated in a multitude of ways. But to ask them to arbitrarily impose or for anyone to be in a position to actually force them to take a cap, that's something like that happened. That they would settle would be probably anti-capitalistic because it limits them in terms of their ability to earn. So there's a definitely double standard. Then you can apply the standard to the players in terms of limiting what they can make irrespective of the market. But then when it comes to you as an owner, then the sky's the limit. So clearly there's a contradiction in terms of this. So, that's simply not going to happen, actually, to answer your question.
Okay, Brother Moses, what's your take so far of just critiquing this relationship between the player's owner and how sports did as you as a tool to clearly exploit what we call the African athlete?
Yeah, I'm being educated. I'm learning stuff as you talk. It seems like the situation is in terms of black players, like and the discrimination is there. I mean, you've been given examples, and I know the profit drive. I mean, Malcolm X said you can't have capitalism without racism, and so it's already built into the system. But I just want to continue to listen and be educated.
Okay, let's do that. Let me throw some numbers out, and I'm going to open this question up to anyone who lacks a response. I was doing some research in terms of the average salary of a football player for the year 2013. They list the average salaries by positions. Let me just share with you what y'all some of the average salaries by position and see if y'all can connect the dots. The lowest salary by position will be your punters and your safeties, I believe, they have something like $1,091,000. Punters make $1,375. Okay? Now, those are your low positions, right? And let's tie in your running backs. The running backs only make $1,682,000. So between $1 million and $1.5 million, your running backs, your punters, your fullbacks, they make $1 million, $1.5 million. Now, on the high side, your high positions will be your defensive line, your defensive end, your quarterbacks. Your defensive line, but defensive end makes like $2,300,000 to $2,700,000. But your highest position among all of them will be your quarterbacks. Your quarterback makes $4 million, or $4 million, the average salary. Now, between the lowest salary, between your fullbacks, your safety, your punter, from more average about $1 million, to his high position, quarterback, maybe about $4 million, and to the one of the most important positions, which is a running back, the quarterback makes about 3 times more than a running back. In terms of placing the priorities on certain positions, they say it's a team game, we're a team, but when it comes to dividending up the money, there seems to be a priority and a preference of giving certain positions more value than others. And a lot of times when we look at these positions, it has a relationship of color. Race seems to play a factor. Why is it these quarterbacks are sometimes getting as much as 20 to 40% of the total salaries for the whole team versus the other positions? How do you explain those numbers, Brother Hackey, and race is not a factor?
Well, I think the numbers are actually incomprehensible because when you stop and think about it, when you think about it just in terms of wear and tear of the game, that no one is subjected to more wear and tear than the running backs. In fact, the running backs, in terms of as a general rule, less longer than others in terms of professional football. So therefore, just in terms of compensation, then it seems to me that the compensation should be skewed toward running backs. Anytime you give a larger or disproportionate compensation to the quarterbacks, it doesn't make sense when you look at the context of quarterbacks in terms of the longevity, in professional football. Those guys can play 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 years. And then when they leave football, they don't leave with these very, very horrendous kinds of ailments that others do. When you contrast that with, just on the defensive side of the ball in terms of the violent collisions that take place, that you would think just in terms of the conversation arena that anybody on the defensive side of the ball will get paid, relative to quarterback. So to me, it doesn't make any sense at all. The only thing it happens back to is this notion in terms of, quarterback being a so-called, quote-unquote, a position of intelligence. And so I think, therefore, the position is that, in contemporary America, that, if you're perceived as more intelligent, then, of course, then you, in and of itself, deserve more and more compensation. So I think it's a subtle kind of racism that exists in terms of the compensation scheme that existed in the NFL. And I think it's something that I think, for a large extent, most people are afraid to talk about. But I think it needs to be discussed.
Good point, Brother Aki. Brother Jabari, recently I heard you made an analysis when we were talking about the lowering of the wages of the athletes and criminalizing athletes and forcing them to go to prison. And as a process of that, there may be a trend where they may start having athletes in prison play sports and have people to look at them as gladiators. When you talk about that concept, a little bit about of that possibility or what may be taking place.
Yes. And
at the same time, while having to spend the money and make money off it. I thought it was
And the reason that I made that analysis was, I can't remember the gentleman's name, but saw an interview online by the sports writer Dave Zirin, and in this particular interview, he was interviewing a guy that played in the NFL for around 6 seasons or so. And what this particular brother was talking about was basically how a lot of times these young guys that go into the NFL, it's almost like an indoctrination camp because they almost try to be into that you're supposed to be obedient to the owner. The owner knows what's good for you. The owner is basically has all of the control. And the brother said that because he didn't buy into that, he was considered a troublemaker. That's why he moved around to several teams in the short span he did play in the NFL. And he wrote a book entitled The Slave Side of Sunday. And one of the things the brother was alluding to was that because of the way the owners are, there's a strong possibility that a lot of prisons are asking for old football equipment so that eventually once brothers who will be great athletes will be incarcerated, it'll be just like in ancient Rome where the convicts basically made up the gladiator game, the big sporting event. In lieu of having to pay people big contracts, people will be going to the prison to see guys play football in the prison yard, and these brothers wouldn't be getting the salaries that they would get if they played in the NFL. So it would be a way to maximize profit while at the same time undercutting people.
I found that a very interesting observation. Very interesting observation. For those who are listening to Africa on the Move, we are discussing the subject today, sports, race, and money. As always, we're going to be going over a little bit today. If you don't get a chance to hear the whole program, we always invite you to go to our archive at www.blogtalkradio.com/ and you turn to or type in Africa-on-the-Move and you view the remainder of this program and the other programs that we have produced for the past year or so. In continuation, one of the things I'd like to raise with Brother Anthony. Brother Anthony, in terms of when we talk about sports, race, and money, we have two-thirds of the NFL, National Football League, made up of African ball players. But yet, we still don't have no more than maybe two to three African coaches and no owners or manager, what would it take to break that barrier from your eyes?
Well, it would probably take a change in the power structure. Because the reason why you know that there are hardly any African owners of any sports teams inside the U.S. is because it takes an enormous amount of capital to become one. And let's see, and there seems to be an effort not to encourage African athletes aspire, to certain roles, even though they have the same experience as the European counterparts. They're not encouraged to pursue anything that's of managerial nature. And again, is a manifestation of capitalism, which is played out in the sports world to an extreme degree that you don't see in other, sectors of the U.S. economy.
You know, Brother Hackey, Jim Brown often called these football players or these athletes today modern-day gladiators, and no more than a new form of being enslaved, and they don't recognize it. One of the things that Jim Brown pointed out to was the fact that one of the things these athletes seldom do, what they should do, is speak out against issues of injustice and stuff. Now, given the fact that we have a high rise of unemployment, what would you say to an athlete when it comes to this question of speaking out on issues that's paramount important to his community, his people? Where should he draw the line in terms of being silent versus taking a stand?
Well, I think it'd be very idealistic on my part to simply advocate that these brothers across the board should take a stand in terms of the kind of injustices inflicted upon our people. But the thing is, I think we have to think long term. I think that there is a certain at times a call to speak out. In fact, when what happened to Trayvon Martin in terms of the brothers on the Miami Heat basketball squad taking a stand, I mean, it was very, very instrumental in terms of calling attention to an injustice that is commonplace with respect to our people. So, indeed, it's needed. But I think just in terms of long-term, I think that one of the things that not everything the athletes have to speak up on, because they have the opportunity to maximize money in terms of actually at some point in the future actually doing those kind of things to the community in which our people really, really need. Now, having said that, of course, the level of consciousness is a sort of totally different question. Whether or not athletes are conscientious, whether they understand the nature of the beast. Now, when you got a situation with someone like a Kobe Bryant, I mean, who's clearly very, very ignorant, very, very naive, it's not likely that you're going to impact on him in such a way that he sees a responsibility to the African community. He doesn't understand that, just by virtue of his position, that he's in a position to actually get media coverage and to highlight a lot of these very pertinent issues that pertain to the African community. So I think that where idealistic speaking is a good thing for them to speak out, but I don't think across the board they should speak out on everything. I think they got to think in terms of long-term, in terms of using their wealth to do things in the community which is desperately needed, which may call for money. So that's simply my view on that.
Anybody else like to take a stand by that one?
And I'd like to add to what Brother Hackey just shared. And you look at an example in regards to the consequences of being intelligent. We can look at what happened with Craig Hodges. He actually had come over for a platform in regards to how to address some of the ills in the black community. And, of course, he talked to Michael Jordan in the infamous moment in the NBA because Michael Jordan felt threatened by what Brother Hodges was putting forth. Eventually led to Craig Hodges being locked out of the NBA for several years. Eventually, he got a job as a shooting coach with the Lakers because of his relationship with Coach Phil Jackson. But it wasn't a question of the brother's talent because he was one of the better shooters the NBA had ever seen, He was very instrumental in the Chicago Bulls' first three championships. Not because he was a man of principle and status, he paid a price that he was willing to pay because he said that he's a man first and foremost and he's not an entertainer.
Okay.
I'd like to add to that. There is a like an unwritten rule that African athletes and athletes in general are just supposed to play ball and entertain and toe the line. And if you rebel in any sort of way, and if you show any sort of conscience at all, you end up isolated. Similar thing happened to brother Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. And in the eyes of, most European fans, he was guilty because he refused to stand when the national anthem was played. Mm-hmm. And that was pointed out, and he was eventually faded from sight. And he was a relatively good shooter, but he became isolated because of his political beliefs. Now he made the error for attributing that to religion, but there was really a political stance.
I agree with you, Anthony. I remember when that incident took place, and exactly to your analysis, that's what they did to him or anybody else who refused to bow down to their lackings. Speaking of that, there seemed to be just the demeanor that if you can't be dehumanized and you stand up and hold your head up and have some dignity, that's a threat to the interests of the owner's well-being, and they get rid of these kind of ball players who speak up or refuse to be treated any kind of way.
Probably the example that's most familiar to most Africans, at least who follow history closely, do you remember the two Olympic athletes that raised the Black Power sign at the 68 Olympics?
Juan Carlos and Tommy Smith.
Right, and they were not able to pursue their professions for years after that happened.
I'm sorry, I have to continue.
No, I was saying that history is full of examples of that. I mean, from Paul Robeson, he was banished practically because of his political stances. Jack Johnson. That was the first African the FBI went after, by the way, before they went after Marcus Garvey.
Okay. Let me get your response to this situation that recently happened on a collegiate level, on a college level. The Northwestern football team just recently won a court suit where they are forcing the universities to look at their athletes as employees. They say they are not just students, they are employees. They help make millions and millions of dollars for their schools and for the institution of sports in college. Matter of fact, I believe the president of the NAACP, he makes about $2 to $3 million a year. But at the same time, there are so many rules where a college athlete came and gets on about a soda. What do you make of this court ruling in terms of seeing these athletes as more than athletes but as employees, and they should be compensated? How do you feel about that, Brother Hackey?
No, I agree with the brothers wholeheartedly. I mean, because after all, they are employees. You stop and think about college athletics. They take those young brothers into the university, and unfortunately, after 4 years, a lot of them can't, a sizable portion of them can't read and write. Because the focus is not so much on enlightenment or education. It's more on bringing in dollars to the institution, and that's exactly what it is. And so, therefore, if that's the focus, to bring in dollars and cents, and then it seems right that these brothers should be compensated and should be received as employees. So I applaud the young brothers. It was a young brother who was a quarterback who spearheaded this movement, And I support them wholeheartedly. They are, in fact, employees, and that's irrefutable.
Because it's clear to see, like, all the athletes or the ball players, they're getting played while the rest of the folks are getting paid. And it's a question of how long we will continue to allow ourselves to participate in this high form of exploitation. And I realize that...
Brother Africa?
Yes, sir.
But I just wanted to add to Brother Hakee's point. What Brother Colter, the quarterback for Northwestern, did by working towards unionizing the Northwestern football team was a continuation of a precedent set forth by the O'Bannon brothers, because they're one of the reasons why it's a certain collegiate video game isn't made anymore, because the O'Bannon brothers lost a major lawsuit because they remember when their UCLA team were winning, they were making the Final Four, and they were appalled when they looked at the numbers, and they looked at, yeah, they were renowned for their basketball prowess, but when it comes in terms of the profit that was made at their expense for UCLA winning, you know, it was sickening that all of the school could make so much money, but the players weren't getting anything of it, so the O'Bannon brothers had launched a lawsuit regards to getting some type of compensation for the players considering the profit that were made at their expense.
Okay. In closing, guys, we only have a few minutes left. And I'd like for y'all to put yourself in a position. Let's say you have some youth today that you're advising who want to go into sports. Understand the nature of this industry and the present conditions that that is going on in the world of sports. What would be some of the things you advise? What kind of advice would you give the youth of today who want to pursue a professional career in the world of sports today? I start with you, Brother Hakee. What kind of advice would you give the youth of today?
I'll just tell the brothers, you know, lay low, you know, do what you got to do, you know, make as much money as you possibly can. You know, when you get out there, have an eye on, you know, furthering the movement in terms of using your wealth to do those kind of things that people leave the community. That's what I would tell them.
Brother Zimbabwe, what would you tell them?
Use your sporting career as a stepping stone and follow an example of Rashard Mendenhall, who said that I enjoyed my time playing in the NFL. It helped me to make a great living, but first and foremost, I'm a man, not an entertainer. And this was a good to set me up for an opportunity to pursue other options as well. So understand that it's not going to be permanent, so use it as a stepping stone for further grading so you can help your people.
And Brother Anthony, what would you tell him?
I would add to what Brother Jabbar said and tell them to learn as much as they can and take advantage of all the opportunities that are available, while they can still play.
And Brother Moses, you have any thoughts, final thoughts on the subject?
I would think the most important thing that we have to understand, that we should all understand, is that it's a political economy. It's not just some kind of economy by itself, but it's a political economy, and that we all play a role in maintaining the social order or going against the social order. And accordingly, we're either hired or fired, because the dominant political economy is capitalism and profit-driven.
Okay, point is well said. In closing, we'd like to thank our listening audience for allowing us the opportunity to come to their home today, discuss this crucial matter of sports, race, and money. And we'd like to remind them that every Sunday at 6 o'clock this time, you can always catch us at the station, or you can dial in at www.blogtalkradio.com/africa-on-the-move and listen to us online. We try to deal with issues and bring information that will be used as a tool to elevate not only you, but our community. And sports is a major part of the lives of many youth today within the African community. And if we don't become more aware of how we are being used in various environments, then we will continue to be exploited and oppressed. So the whole key is to be aware, is awareness, and with this awareness, we must be organized. So for tonight, 15 Sports, Race, and Money. Again, we'd like to thank you for allowing us to come to your home and try to learn as much as we can about this institution of sports, because it's one of the greatest institutions that capitalism has ever produced when you're talking about how to effectively and be very sophisticated in terms of sport, exploiting the youth of this society, and particularly after you. Until next time, let's continue to go forward and backward and forward. We thank you for listening to Africa on the Move. As your host, Brother Africa, let's strive to go forward and backwards and forward. We thank you.